Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share she is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer Breast Health exclamation point, The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Justine. It's so wonderful to be introduced by you. What do I have to share today? Well, the goats and I went on walkabout out in the woods, and we found fairy chanterelles, and we found black chanterelles, and we found big golden chanterelles, like drops of sunlight left on the forest floor, and we found the first red leaves. Now, if you've been with me for a while, you know that I go by an earth calendar, and that earth calendar starts the seasons when the earth starts the seasons, not when our person-made calendars start the seasons. So the beginning of August, and the last day of July and the first 2 days of August, traditionally is the festival of the first harvest, the first feast. And that marks the beginning of the harvest season, which is autumn, which is fall. Now, I know many of you are saying, wait, it's only August, it's still summer. And that's fine if you're not a tree or a plant. Because if you're a tree or a plant and you're thinking it's still summer, you are going to really not be ready for what is happening next. So I found the first red leaves falling on the forest floor today. The first tree saying, I know what's happening. I can sense the days are getting shorter. I'm listening in the background to hear if there's a baby crying yet, Rebecca.
No baby yet. But we're getting close. I'm not, you know, these things are so unpredictable, but I'm not feeling like it's quite time yet. We have August 9th, the due date, so, and I went a week over with my last, so we'll see.
So could go over again. Tends to run in my family too that we go over a bit.
Yeah, they say that you gestated about the same time. I mean, I've heard different things, but a lot of my friends have have the same gestational period for their birth. So we'll see.
The goats, however, are incredibly regular.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. 150 days.
To the exact day?
Pretty much to the exact day. I've had occasionally 149 days, and I think once 151 days. But they are
to witness one of your goats give birth when I was there.
Yes.
Spring.
Yes. Wonderful spring. Well,
very cool thing for me.
Yes, truly. It is always a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Who do we have waiting on the line for us tonight?
We have one caller waiting on the line with a question, and at 9 o'clock we're going to have Jean Siegel joining us.
Yes, how wonderful. I'm really looking forward to that.
All right, so we'll open up the line to the first caller in the 516 area code.
Green blessings. Hello.
Thank you so much, Susan. This is Joyce. I've come up just to the bookstore for some of your teachings, and they've been wonderful. I hate to describe myself like this, but I'm the woman right now who has the endometrial cancer that had spread. That is, we spoke about the chemo. I just finished my sixth round of 6 hours each time of chemo. And
as a class, you were sitting directly to my left.
Yes, so yes. And I recently went up to the bookstore last week. We did a few-hour trip up there, and it was just so wonderful, brought back wonderful memories. Now, I am doing the milk thistle, and I'm due to go for the three CAT scans to see, you know, what had happened with this chemo. But I have a few questions as far as protecting myself from the radiation. And okay. Since this last chemo also, I can't get rid of the medical that metal taste. It's really taken me down this last chemo. So thank you.
So have you worked at all with slippery elm?
No.
I think the slippery elm will get rid of that metal taste for you.
Okay, great. Okay.
The way I prefer to deliver slippery elm is as slippery elm honey balls. And I mix up slippery elm powder with honey and form them into small balls and then suck on them and do my best to spend 15 to 20 minutes dissolving one of the balls. In other words, I don't want to just eat it. Can. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But like the long, slow dissolve, I just have the feeling that it's like really permeating and penetrating into my system when I do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Slippery elm, first and foremost, reestablishes intestinal integrity and rebuilds the lining of the intestine. So that's quite wonderful for anyone who's dealing with chemotherapy. But more to the point for what you're talking about, is that slippery elm neutralizes poisons.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
And I have seen it work quite amazingly in that respect.
Okay.
In terms of the radiation, it has been found that the best thing to do beforehand is to speak to it that your body has received a lot of carotene-rich foods.
Okay.
That could be anything from a baked sweet potato to a glass of carrot juice. And I know people are going to go, oh, I can't believe, Susan, we just said carrot juice. There is, however, a constituent in carrots, which is outside the cell wall, and which fights cancer, and so it is present in carrot juice.
Okay.
And you the coloring matter, and it's that coloring matter that contains the carotene. So that it definitely fits what we want. And many times people who are doing chemotherapy have a hard time with solitude.
Mm-hmm. True. So true. Okay. Yeah, I did, as a matter of fact, because I remember you said about the carrots.
Yeah.
And the sweet potato, but unfortunately tonight I just steamed it. Okay, so bake. Okay. Okay.
And carrot juice, and even carrot juice you buy in the supermarket is fine.
Great.
So that's beforehand. Or any other, you know, any other thing, like tomato juice would also work. Right? Just something that has a lot of carotenes in it. So brightly colored, orange, red. And then after the radiation, seaweed.
Seaweed. Any particular type?
Wakame or kombu.
Okay. Can I use that like in a stew, like a jukki bean kind of stew with that, or?
I say yes. If you're eating solid food, you can put it right into any super stew. And if you're not, then make an infusion of it.
Oh.
Or boiling water over 1 ounce of the seaweed, let it sit, and then sip it.
Okay. And I'm sorry. And one more question. I'm sorry. The book, should I follow the book down there, Breast Health? Which book should I?
Are they that different?
For me, a little bit. I guess the book that went into the Taxol was, I guess I had a little trouble seeing it. That was since I was doing the chemo at that point. So, I didn't know what you recommended, or just go through both of them. And
here's how I see it. My book, Breast Cancer? Breast Health! Is focused on breast cancer. Now, we could, in a way, also throw in prostate cancer because they're very, very similar. And certainly, I have had hundreds of people tell me that they use the information in that book for a great number of other kinds of cancer as well. Maybe not the specific stuff about the breast, but certainly the information about getting through chemotherapy and getting through radiation treatments and surgery and all of that, as well as general ideas about what herbs they could use to help themselves. What's in down there is more specific to the type of cancer you are dealing with.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I just couldn't believe how much information the books were. You know, when I saw them at the store when we went this weekend, the information was just, it felt like all the questions that I had that I, you know, the doctor could not answer was really in, and they were, it was there, and it was like being able, like having a best friend there.
Thank you so much. That really makes my heart smile.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your patience with me with this and, like, hand-holding me. This is just really, thank you so much.
You are welcome. And thanks for keeping us in the loop so we know what's up with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Green blessings. Good night.
Good night.
Looks like we have another caller waiting with a question.
What?
In the 978 area code.
That's me.
Green blessings, hello.
Hello, Susan. This is Linny.
Hi, Linny. How are you?
In this moment, I am so good.
All right. What a delight to hear your voice.
It is so great to be calling. I'm calling you because I am pregnant, and I have decided not to give birth, and what I'm planning on doing is having a medication abortion, which is taking a series of pills, and so I want to know about what what that means for my body, this type of abortion, and also how to nourish myself physically and emotionally through this process.
I believe that once a woman is pregnant, whenever that pregnancy ends, she is giving birth.
Yes.
Whether we choose to grow and gestate a child, or whether we choose to give birth before that child can survive on its own. For us, for our psyches and our bodies, it is very much the same thing.
Yes, I feel that. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I want you to really honor that part of you. And to have a council with the many parts of you that have given their input in making this decision. Each of those voices can be heard and can tell you what it requires. 2 years after I gave birth to my daughter, I was pregnant again and did not want to be. And I didn't have the choice that you have. I didn't have any choice except to do it myself. And I know where those products of conception are because they were saved and they were put in a jar and they were buried in the woods not 2 miles away from where I now live. Every child we are pregnant with is our child and will always be. Some don't get very big.
Say that again.
Some of them don't get very big.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, what medical science tells us is that between 25% and 35% of all pregnancies are spontaneously released from the womb. And Deborah Maya, wonderful, wonderful woman, her treaty was called On Releasing Spirit Life from the Womb.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the choice of words there, that we are releasing the life.
Mm.
A woman came to me and she said, I really want to get pregnant. I said, have you never been pregnant? She says, I've been pregnant 8 times. I said, and? She said, and 8 times I have chosen not to have the child. I said, and? She says, and so now I don't think I deserve to be pregnant.
Mm.
I said, let's go and talk to those children. They're your children. We can talk to them. And so we went into a trance. And we called up first child. And it was pretty debonair. And it said, doesn't matter. Oh, you didn't choose to grow me into a child this time, but I'm your child, and I'll still be your child, and maybe someday I'll get a body.
Mm-hmm.
And we called up the second child. And it was the same spirit. Lenny, all 8 of those children shared spirit. They're 8 different individuals. And they said, so? Now you want me? Let's go. Not you should be punished for what you've done, but let's go.
Mm. Yes.
You're drinking your nourishing herbal infusions. You're eating a good, broad diet. You are involved in your community. You have good friends. There isn't anything I could add to that to help you. You have all the elements you need.
I do, and I feel that.
Yes.
And I have you, which is such a blessing. Thank you.
And I was going to say, and hooray, you're asking for help. Yeah. You're asking for help. I'm so touched. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. I love you so much. Have a wonderful rest of your show tonight.
I love you, Libby. Bye-bye. Green
Bye. Blessing. Blessing.
That's all the callers we have for now, so we'll move into an email question.
Well, I just want to say that Lynn just finished an apprenticeship, and it was actually her second live-in apprenticeship, and it's just delightful having her here and having an opportunity to strengthen our relationship, and it's great. She lives nearby, only 100 miles away. And she's involved with a wonderfully creative group in Manhattan. And they're doing a performance piece about witches toward the end of this month. So if anybody's interested in knowing more about that, you know, get in touch with us. And we'll see if we can get you in touch with Lynn. Okay, so an emailed question.
Yeah, all right. Hello, Susan. I am 40, and I have been trying to conceive for 2 years. I don't have the figures, but the doctor says my hormone levels are good and indicating I am ovulating. My womb is healthy. I am generally in good health except for a slight borderline hypothyroidism, which I have been told can cause complication in the event I should get pregnant, but not prevent a pregnancy. Recently, my partner got tested, and his sperm count has come out quite low. Again, sorry, I don't have the figures. Prompting the doctor to say that I will probably not get pregnant unless I do an IVF. I have heard your advice on late pregnancies and improving fertility. I was wondering if you have any advice for improving the health of the man and his sperm count. Thank you.
I do, and this is a topic that is in down there. One of the books that the first caller was asking about, because it goes into a little detail about the type of cancer that she's dealing with. All right. That has given me a moment to walk into the room and get my copy of Down There. And I will go to the section on testes. And here we have fertility. And as we recall in this book, because there's so much information, I have little help boxes. So we're looking in testes at fertility, infertility on page 309. And our little help box says it may take as much as 9 months for these remedies to be effective. Ally with pumpkin seeds. Drink oat straw infusion. Eat more shellfish. And experiment with astragalus. I think what we need to know is that it takes 2 months for sperm to mature. So if a man were to start doing something right now, the sperm that he's making now wouldn't be available for 2 months. So the minimum amount of time that we usually say it takes to see a change in the number of sperm and the sperm count in the motility of the sperm and in the normality of the sperm. There's three things that we're looking at in the sperm. Are the sperm normal or abnormal? Do they move around really well? Are they kind of sluggards? And how many of them are there? And these things that we're talking about, pumpkin seeds, oat straw infusions, shellfish, and astragalus, can help all three of those situations. But it does take some time. Let's go a little deeper into this. Astragalus is quite specific for increasing sperm motility. So what that means is the ability of the sperm to move. And one of the things that we know is even if there's a low sperm count, increasing the motility of the sperm can help improve the possibility of pregnancy. Powdered astragalus root food, 4 dropperfuls of the tincture daily, a cup or two of infusion daily. Excellent. Oat straw infusion frees up bound testosterone, thus improving the number and the motility of the sperm. Red clover infusion is certainly the best single remedy that I know of for increasing fertility. And it increases fertility in both women and men. So it's a lovely thing to add to what you're doing. In fact, if you've been listening, you know that I drink a quart of nourishing herbal infusion on a daily basis. And here we have 2 wonderful herbal infusions, which you could rotate through or even drink just a quart of each one of them once a week would certainly help. A quart several times a week, up to 3 times a week, would certainly help more. Ryan Drum says that zinc-rich foods like oysters, free-range eggs, and pumpkin seeds are exactly what is needed to increase that sperm count. The ancient Aztecs called the avocado the testicles, and they were considered ideal for nourishing the sperm and increasing their strength and power. In addition to those things, you could also consider ginseng, a series of acupuncture treatments, and looking at possible things that are harming the sperm. For instance, heat. Heat is very harmful to sperm. What are we talking about heat? We're talking about tight-fitting pants, tight-fitting underwear, tight-fitting swimsuits, hot tubs, saunas, laptop computers. Sperm degrades after being next to an active cell phone for an hour. All right, I know. That's the image I got, too, when I heard about that. I say, is somebody talking on the phone with their you-know-what? No. We're talking about having it in your pants pocket. Yes, if you put your cell phone in your front pants pocket, it is hanging down there near the testicles, and sperm degrade if you have that cell phone in your pocket for an hour or more. Native Americans usually refrain from sexual relationships, sometimes for months, after sweat lodge ceremonies because they were so aware of the effects of heat on the sperm. As a matter of fact, a health worker from India told me that men can limit their family size by sitting in extremely hot water for 15 minutes every night. She claims that the ejaculate is non-fertile after the first 10 treatments. So you sit in hot water every night for 10 nights, and from then on, you just keep sitting in hot water every night for 15 minutes, and you are throwing blanks. But if what you want is to have lots of active, wonderful sperm, then stay away from hot baths. Go for a shower instead. No saunas, no hot tubs, no sweat lodges, right? How about supplements? Supplements of vitamin E, zinc, vitamin B12, and selenium have been known to help increase the motility of sperm and the morphology of the sperm. Supplemental ascorbic acid, about 200 milligrams a day, can double sperm count. In one study, none of the placebo takers, but all of those who received 200 milligrams of ascorbic acid a day, achieved conception. 4 grams of L-arginine daily. Doubled sperm count in 2 weeks in one study. And increased their motility, too. Just some caution. On page 299 about taking L-arginine. Oh, yes. Diabetics should avoid L-arginine because it interferes with things that are going on with them. And it also, L-arginine worsens shingles and herpes outbreaks. It doesn't cause them. But if you have that, it is going to make it worse. Supplements of 1 gram of L-carnitine taken 3 times a day for 3 months with alpha-lipoic acid increase sperm count and motility in 78% of the men taking it. So if you are not being able to write fast enough to catch everything I'm saying, may I encourage you to get a copy of Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way.
Okay, well, we've had 3 more callers queue up with questions. Are you ready to go to a caller?
I certainly am.
All right. In the 570 area code.
Hi, Susan.
Hello.
My name's Julia. I was just at your workshops this weekend.
Yes.
And there was a question that I had that I never got to ask you, so I wanted to ask you.
All right.
A couple of days ago, I made myself a pillow, like a little pillow with a cronwort in it to sleep with.
Uh-huh, with dried cronwort.
Dried, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And my dreams have been really vivid since I started doing that. And the one night I had this dream where a guy that I knew from high school, who I haven't really had any kind of communication with for the past 5 years, and before that not even all that much, but I had a dream about him that I met him on a road nearby my house, and you know, we like greeted each other, and it just felt very real, like so real. Like when I woke up, I was like, God, that felt real. And I'm just trying to log it, and as soon as I opened up my computer, I had a message from him. I had an email from him. And there's, like, no reason for me to talk to this guy, for him to talk to me. And the funny thing about it is that, so I'm trying to, like, ascertain why he messaged me. And it's like he doesn't have a reason why. Like, because at first I'm thinking, like, because he wrote me the message at 3:30 in the morning, approximately when I'd be having this dream. And it was just kind of like a, hey, how are you kind of thing. And it was totally out of the blue. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, this was, like, a psychic dream of sorts, you know. But what I'm wondering is, because I'm trying to draw out of him why he contacted me, and it's just, there's no reason. There's literally just no reason. He's just like, we never had a real strong connection, nothing. So what I'm wondering is it possible to, like, summon somebody in a dream? Because I swear that's what it feels like happened.
Well, I think first what I want to say is to remind us of what cronwort said to us, which is Artemisia vulgaris. And remember in class, somebody said, oh, is this mugwort? And I said,
that was me. Yeah.
Like to be called mugwort because she doesn't have anything to do with the drunken fantasies of people with their noses in mugs.
Right.
Or is to be called cronwort because she gives the true visions of old age.
Okay.
Now, that said, everything in our dreams is ourselves.
Right.
So, it is a wonderful and amazing synchronicity that you had a dream about this person and that the person emailed you at the same time. But which one of you was summoning the other is a question I don't think we will ever answer. And I don't think it has to be answered. What's that line in the song? You fly down the street on the chance you might meet, and you meet not merely by chance.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, because I've had the experience before. It just feels like, wow. Like, things would be like, just winding ourselves up. But just really, because he's got, like, nothing of substance to say. It's, like, a weird kind of thing to leave out. Make that connection to me because we didn't really have that big of a foundation to have a connection that would span all these years in the first place. So it just seemed really, geez. But I don't know. But I understand what you're saying, that it's not like any one party is doing something at any time.
Exactly.
Right. Right. Okay. All right, well, that was my question, and that's about it.
Hi! Green blood. Right. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
All right, the next caller in the 404 area code.
Hi, Susan. I have a question about sleep tonight. Specifically, is it possible to train myself to become a deeper sleeper? I'm addicted to a fan, and I can't stand any noise. I wake up very easily, and I'm feeling like it's time to try to let go of some of that, if that makes sense.
Let me see if I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
You would characterize yourself as a fairly light sleeper.
Yes.
Sounds of any kind disturb your sleep and cause you to wake up?
Yes, I wake up very easily.
Do you go back to sleep very easily?
Not always, although it's a lot easier since I gave up caffeine and started drinking the nourishing herbal infusion. So it is easier to fall back asleep now, but I'm still a very light sleeper when I'm trying to get to sleep. Oh, and even once I am asleep, if there's noise in the house, I'll wake up.
Mm-hmm.
If it sounds over the fan, the roar of the fan.
And we very much appreciate your vigilance. It keeps us all safe. It's what it is. You're vigilant. You're very vigilant, mm-hmm. You know, to what might be creeping around in the dark. And that's...
Yes.
Excellent quality, except we're not living out in the forest or the veldt anymore. So it doesn't ever really get to come to fruition in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you've ever tried earplugs.
I have. I actually just got some recently for a family trip. And they were helpful. I got a sleep mask also because any light bothers me.
I do not travel without my earplugs and my sleep mask.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I find them wonderful aids. I'm quite sensitive to light. That needs to be
me too.
Dark for me not to be vigilant. And so I literally travel with a sleep mask that puts me in the dark. And I have one
mm-hmm.
under my pillow at home, too, because my bed is by a south window.
Mm-hmm.
The sun comes in there in the summer and wakes me up early, and I just grab my... It's actually an eye pillow with buckwheat hulls. Since I sleep on my back, it's pretty easy just to lay it across my eyes, and wow, I go right back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I like the buckwheat pillow better than just a light mask because I actually like the weight on my eyes.
I've never heard of that, a buckwheat pillow?
This buckwheat hulls.
Buckwheat hulls pillow. Okay.
And it's just got a little bit of a weight to it. It's not really heavy, but just enough that is relaxing to me because what's waking us is vigilance, is wanting to be sure everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then we need to find the things that reassure us so that we can go to sleep.
Okay. is there anything, as far as sleeping with a fan, is there any easy way to quit doing that? Any way to eat? I don't know.
Move to someplace where it's colder.
Colder.
You have the fan on because you're too hot, yes?
No, I'm addicted to the noise because it blocks out any
noise
sound.
The whoop, 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 whoop. It's a big ceiling fan.
No, it's a noise machine. I used to sleep with a big box fan, but that irritated my sinuses. And it's not the wind now. It's just a noise machine that people buy for newborns, and I have to sleep with that on. If it's not on, I will lay awake for a much longer time and be much more wakeful than usual.
You have found something that eases your vigilance and that makes you feel safe and secure.
Yes.
So don't be mean and take it away from yourself.
But isn't it not a good thing overall to be addicted to a fan?
You're using the word addiction very loosely. A true addiction causes intense physical symptoms when you withdraw from it.
Okay.
Anyone who drinks several cups of coffee a day suddenly not have any coffee?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they okay?
No.
No, they are not. They are addicted. Or someone who smoked cigarettes for a long time suddenly not smoking? Or, shall we, attempting not to smoke? Mm-hmm. No, real addictions are different than dependencies.
Okay. That's the right word.
Yes, you are dependent on the noise.
Yes.
Most people are dependent on wearing shoes, aren't they?
They are.
But we would not say they are addicted to shoes.
Right.
A great many people are dependent on glasses.
Myself included.
Would you say that you're addicted to glasses? Your glasses?
Oh, no.
No?
No.
As a matter of fact, they're a tool that makes your life easier and better.
Yes.
Now, when I wore contacts, I was addicted to my contacts. In the loose meaning of addiction. I would wake up in the morning and put in my contacts before I did anything else. And sometimes I would go to sleep with them in. And if you told me I had a choice of walking down Fifth Avenue, either stark naked or without my contacts, I would say, I'll take off my clothes. I got to have my contacts. Because they feel in control of my world. And it's a very big deal for me to take my contacts off and to start really seeing the world the way I see it. And one of the great things that happened was it made me slow down and look at the plants.
Oh.
But I
saw that.
Just look at any picture of me. You'll see those glasses perched right up on top of my head, ready to see something far, far away. Because I don't see things far away really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my far-seeing spectacles. Okay to be a modern. It's okay to be a modern person. This is 2014, and you're alive right now.
Right.
In the past, there would have been some kind of rhythmical sound that would have lulled you to sleep. Whether it was the waves lapping on the shore, or drums beating, or the a slight mechanical sound of, say, water going into an irrigation ditch through, you know, a little pump, 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 pump. Oh, yes. The
so,
of ordinary, regular, rhythmical and repeated sounds were always part of our going to sleep.
So are you're saying you don't think it's necessary to get rid of the dependence on the fan?
Not at all.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Is
I'm
there...
so glad that you found something that works for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. I do hate that it takes electricity, though. I feel like it's wasteful.
I hear you. I doubt that it draws that much electricity. And you can buy a timer which will allow you to have it turn off at a preset time.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you said it was most important when you were going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're concerned about it running all night, you could put it on the timer, which would turn it off after half an hour or an hour or 2 hours or whatever you think is appropriate.
I'll have to try that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Green blessings.
Green blessings.
Good night.
Good night.
All right. We have, looks like, three more callers waiting in the 989 area code.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have questions about my help with my thyroid.
Okay.
I'm taking Synthroid right now, and I've been doing infusions, your herbal infusions that you suggested for about 6 to 8 weeks. But I want to try to figure out how to get off the Synthroid.
And why do you want to get off the Synthroid?
Because it costs me $50 a month. And I've been taking it for a long time, like 12 years.
Well, I'll tell you what I usually tell people. That is, if you've taken Synthroid on a daily basis for more than a year, it's unlikely that you will ever not take it. Ryan Drum, who's considered an expert on herbal issues and the thyroid, says that he has helped people who've taken Synthroid for up to 2 years to come off of it. And what he suggests is Fucus, F-U-C-U-S, Fucus. It's a kind of seaweed. The people that I know, almost all of them women, who have used it successfully, women who haven't taken Synthroid, or if they have taken it, haven't taken it regularly and only for a short time. And they tend to make an infusion of Fucus using 1 ounce of the dried seaweed in a quart of boiling water and allowing that to steep without any further heat applied for 4 hours or overnight, and then drink a cup of that a day.
I tried bladderwrack. Is that the same?
Yes.
It's a seaweed.
Correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't really like the flavor.
No, the flavor is abominable, isn't it? It's really, oh, my gosh.
So it's a forced thing?
Look at how much food costs. I don't know if you're going to be saving any money.
I just want to try to correct the thyroid issues. My doctors are... not helpful.
No, because they haven't ever seen that happen.
See what happened to get off the thyroid, you mean? Medicine?
To get off Synthroid, correct.
So you're telling me that I won't be getting off of Synthroid ever in my life if I've been taking it so long? Is that the suggestion, or am I hearing wrong?
I don't think you're hearing wrong.
Well, that's a serious sad face for me.
I hear you. We believe, we don't know, but we believe that once you start taking Synthroid, that the body converts over to using fat. And that it's a different metabolic process. And that it's quite difficult to get your body to convert back to making all of the various thyroid factors. Because
but you're not saying that.
Because
I'm
the
sorry.
Difficult beginning was that the thyroid wasn't making adequate amounts of hormone, right?
Yes, it's underactive.
And so we have this wonderful option of taking Synthroid. Now, you could, if you don't want to take Synthroid, you could take Armour Thyroid, which is thyroid from pig thyroids. So it is a more natural form of thyroid than Synthroid.
I would have to get that through the doctor, right?
Have to get that through the doctor, too. And the dosage varies from batch to batch. And there is a bump, again, as your metabolism changes from using Synthroid to using the more natural thyroid. I would say if your goal is to change your thyroid and have your thyroid be able to make its own thyroid then, hormones, that an interim step would be to switch to the Armour Thyroid. Your doctor will try to talk you out of it. Doctors do not like it because it is not always consistent, so they sometimes have to change the dose from batch to batch. And then from that, see if you can work toward your thyroid producing its own thyroid hormone, because the Armour Thyroid hormone is a little closer in the metabolic process, is a little closer to what you want than the Synthroid is.
Is there something more that I can add to my diet?
Well, I think you're doing good work with the nourishing herbal infusion. There is a chapter on thyroid in New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way. I hope you have a copy of that, and so you can refer to things there. In general, all seaweeds are thought to improve the functioning of the thyroid, but especially the kelp seaweeds. Fucus is the most medicinal of them and is the one that is recommended to be used when someone wants to move from a dependence on thyroid hormone taken in pill form to a thyroid hormone being made by their own thyroid. But any kelp in the diet seems to improve the functioning of the thyroid.
Okay, I just had to figure out how to get it.
My sense here, however, is that what needs to be changed is your conception of your thyroid. And by that, I mean from the moment that someone first said to you, your thyroid is underactive, until now, you have had a certain view of your thyroid. There's a certain way you have addressed it. There's a certain way you think about it. There's a certain kind of surround that you have with it. My thyroid is underactive. My thyroid isn't producing enough hormones. My thyroid. And in order for there to be change, all of these thoughts have to change. One of my teachers suggested that a starting point for many things that we want to change is the word yet. So if one of your thoughts is, my thyroid doesn't make enough hormone, doesn't make enough thyroid hormone, then we add yet to the end. My thyroid doesn't make enough thyroid hormone yet.
Okay.
So in this way, we open the door to change. It can be amazingly difficult to change something that we have held for 12 years.
You know, I've done a lot of work with my diet. My diet's, besides the fish and the seaweed.
So what do you mean you're doing a lot of work with your diet?
I don't eat any hydrogenated oils, any soy oils. I eat coconut oil, butter, olive oil.
Excellent.
You
changed the diet.
I've added something new. I started off with the coconut oil, and that helped me lose a lot of weight, feel a lot better. Then I started totally eliminating the soy and the canola, the corn, and which meant learning how to read labels. And 90% of our food has soy in it. So I can a lot. I process my food.
Good for you. Oh, 5 gold stars.
But I haven't seemed to figure out my thyroid yet.
Wait a second. We did just figure out your thyroid is the engine of your focusing in on yourself and taking better care of yourself. I think you owe it an enormous round of applause.
Don't be so hard on it.
Look at all the benefit that this has brought you.
Oh, it has brought tremendous amount of benefits. A lot of things. I have corrected a lot of problems.
Yes.
But I'd like to eliminate the Synthroid.
I hear you.
That would be my goal.
Not a goal that I can go along with. If you want to improve the health of your thyroid, I could go along with that goal.
But you're telling me that...
No, what I'm telling you is that the universe hears what we say and gives it to us, but we don't recognize what we're saying. So if we say, I want to eliminate the Synthroid, the universe could cause you to become broke so you couldn't buy the Synthroid anymore.
Well, we don't want that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is not a goal I'm willing to be behind.
Okay.
Because the universe will take the most direct route to satisfying that goal. And it's often not a way we want the goal satisfied. So we have to be very careful what we ask for. And to me, it's always preferable to ask for what I want rather than for what I don't want. So what I'm suggesting is your goal is that you have a goal to make your thyroid healthier.
Make thyroid healthier.
Healthier is better than healthy. Healthy implies some endpoint. Healthier reminds us that it's a process. And that whether or not you are taking thyroid hormone, your thyroid itself can be healthier. And if at some point that healthier thyroid becomes healthy enough to make its own thyroid, well, that's great too. And we got there by wishing the thyroid to be healthy. And so the universe can help us in whatever way it chooses to help us have a healthier thyroid, yes?
Yes. I got it. When you drink the fucus infusion,
I don't like it. My thyroid does not need that. Thank you very much. I use other seaweed in my cooking, and that is enough to keep me ticking along. No, 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 no. Fucus, yarg.
So can I figure out how to add it in soups or something?
I doubt it. It makes everything taste like it.
Oh.
And that's what people say, is they just hold their nose and down it.
And what was the recommended amount of drinking to get the adequate vitamins and nutrients?
A cup a day.
A cup?
Mm-hmm.
A cup of hold on my nose, okay.
No, and that can be broken up into sips. You just put the cup out, and every time you walk past it, take a sip, grimace, and go on. Well, it's not that it tastes nasty or bad or vile. It just tastes so minerally and oceany and fishy. It's just like, ark. No, it's not like bitter. It doesn't make you want to throw up. It's not like fetid or rancid or yucky. It's just so much what it is.
I just, yeah, correct. I did not like the taste. I just, yeah. I mean, yeah, I can force myself to drink it, but I was just hoping there would be
something else.
Something else. Thank you.
Be blessed.
You too.
I've drank Fucus in the past, and I've drank it with a straw really quickly after refrigerating it.
Oh, great idea! A straw,
yeah.
And hold you.
And I do feel like it did something for my thyroid. I have a goiter on my thyroid, and I feel like I got this surge of energy through my thyroid after drinking it for about 3 weeks. But I stopped drinking it because it is so intense. Like, I can't even, like, when I think about it, it makes me a little nauseous.
And it's hard to even describe, you know, the taste, because it's not bad.
It's really fishy is what it is. And I love fish, but it's, like, really fishy. It's really,
really
intense.
Really, really, really intense, right?
Yeah.
But only
all right.
Intense. Okay.
So the next caller is in, calling from an unspecified phone number, so...
All righty.
You know who you are?
Dear unspecified phone number, talk to us. Hello, hello.
Okay, well, we'll move down to the next caller then. Maybe come back to them. This one also is from a 111 area code that I see, unspecified.
What's that?
Oh,
is that you?
Hi.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can.
Yes. Did you hear my intro there saying what I'm going through for the acid reflux?
We didn't hear anything that you said until just now.
Oh, okay. Somehow I heard myself. Okay. So I'm going through I was naturally trying to get rid of the acid reflux. And I was taking Veganzymes and apple cider vinegar and all kinds of things. And so now I'm reading about your infusions, and I want to ask what you recommend that I do to get rid of the acid reflux as well as hot flashes.
Okay, so R-E-F-L-E-X, reflex.
Right.
It's something that happens when you hit your knee. It's a reflexive action. Reflux.
Right, reflux. I'm saying it wrong. Absolutely. Right, reflux.
Is what's happening to you.
Right.
Which means to flow. So it's quite different. So acid reflux generally occurs because there is not enough acid in the stomach.
I studied that, and I took something else that was supposed to create acid, and then I discovered that my body seemed to have enough acid in it, that wasn't the problem.
I'm not exactly clear about what you're saying, that your body has enough acid in it. I'm talking about your stomach.
I agree with you. I thought that was the problem. So I got various products that were supposed to increase the acid. I actually went to another special healer, and he said that he also said that he thought that my body, that was not the problem.
Okay, and so the problem is?
I mean, it wasn't the problem that I didn't have enough, because I thought that was it, and I thought, wonderful, I'll take more, and it will go away.
And so what did this person think was the root of the problem?
That person did not tell me what the root of the problem was. All they said was that they did not think I wasn't the problem, it was that I did not have enough acid.
Well, the other possibility is that you have a hiatal hernia.
I thought of that also. So what else should I do?
There are only two solutions I know of for acid reflux from hiatal hernia. One is surgery,
mm-hmm.
and the other are the medications, like the purple pills,
right.
stop the production of acid.
Right.
There's some pretty bad side effects.
Right. That's why I wasn't taking that at all until recently. I had a doctor friend suggest I take it for 2 weeks and just to ease my esophagus and let everything relax and then stop and see if... Because I've gotten rid of this before. For a while, I had raw milk, and it went away by me using raw milk. But then it stopped working, and I also stopped dairy. So I know it went away before. So it wasn't it might not be that it's a hiatal hernia, because it did stop before from previous.
Yeah. So I'm so sorry that you have decided to limit your diet. Generally, any limit on a diet is going to cause ill health.
I'm sorry, what made you think I was limiting my diet?
You just told me you're not consuming dairy.
Oh, well, the dairy started to bother me. It's not just because of that. When I take dairy, I wake up in the morning and I'm all stuffy. I love dairy. I would love to solve the problem and be able to have dairy. I love cheese and I love milk. But all of a sudden, I hit 40-something and my...
Yes, excuse me?
Excuse me?
Oh.
Dairy. Yeah, all of a sudden the dairy started. I would wake up and my eyes would be crusty in the morning.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
No, it does not. Really?
Well, that's what I started experiencing.
Really good placebo-controlled studies with people who claim this kind of thing have never been able to show that milk or dairy products cause those reactions.
Well, as soon as I stop having those certain items that are dairy, I don't get that problem. I don't wake up like that in the morning. If I have certain items that I figure out what I ate the next morning, I can tell it was from dairy. If I have ice cream, if I have milk, if I have cheese, then my eyes get all crusty.
And I can tell you what makes the sun rise. Birds singing.
Yeah.
Right? Because before the sun comes up, the birds sing, yes?
Sure.
So that causes the sun to rise, yes? This is the most common fallacy in human thinking, is that what comes before causes what comes after.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have science. So that we can free ourselves of this ruinous belief that something that comes before something is the cause of it.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely is.
Well, that's interesting.
Very, very rarely.
I mean, I've been trying to figure this out myself without going on the medication. The doctor just wants to give you the purple pill and say goodbye, whereas I'm trying to heal my body and figure out what do I do next to go back to normal.
And I'm saying that one of the most important parts of your diet to go back to normal is good quality dairy products.
All right, so I should go back to having the raw milk then.
Very much suggest if you have an access to raw milk and yogurt.
And I love the yogurt.
But not sweetened in any way and not with fruit in it.
Okay.
My own personal experience in tracking down what's going on in people's diet is that the vast majority of the time that people believe that they are having reactions to dairy, they're actually having reactions to fruit.
Oh, interesting.
But the thing, they eat the fruit and the dairy close together or at the, in, you know, proximity. And dairy is demonized and fruit is angelicized.
Okay.
And yet the fructose in fruit is extremely hard on our bodies. So much so that the live-in apprentices are not allowed any fruit of any kind for the first 3 weeks they're here.
Okay.
There was an apprentice who, before she came this year, said to me, I just want you to know that, like, whatever I eat makes my belly swell up, and I'm just in horrible pain, and I've stopped eating this, and I've stopped eating this, and I've stopped eating this. And I said, you'll eat all of those things when you're here, and everything will be fine.
Wonderful.
Indeed, it was. And she said, what's going on? I said, you're not eating any fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not eating any raw foods.
Okay.
Because there's no nutrition in raw food. So, milk is herbal medicine. It's the first food, it's the last food, and it's the best food for everybody, every day. I don't drink much fluid milk, but I do consume yogurt on a daily basis.
Okay.
And it's not necessary to eat huge amounts.
Right.
A quart of yogurt a week, which is a quarter cup a day, is all that's needed for good health.
A quarter a cup a day. And what? So you're eating, what kind of yogurt are you eating?
Golly gee, I keep a herd of dairy goats. I make my own yogurt.
Okay. So you just said not with sweeteners, not with sweeteners or fruit.
That's right, no sweetener, no fruit.
If I have
to buy yogurt, I always look for yogurt that is whole milk yogurt, not skim milk yogurt.
Okay.
Yogurt, but whole milk yogurt.
I think I spent an hour one day at the store studying all the yogurts because I was just seeing how much sugar was in all of them and trying to find one that had the least. So I guess I have to do what you do and make my own.
You can buy yogurt with no sugar in it.
Right.
You buy plain yogurt.
Plain. Just make sure it's plain. So if you're not supposed to add, what do you add to your yogurt if it's plain to make it taste better?
I think it tastes great.
Oh, okay. Well, I've had plain yogurt, and I used to have yogurt like with, that had like fruit in it, which now I'm seeing you don't think is good to have. So,
not that I don't think it's good to have. And I certainly eat small fruits, blueberries, strawberries, blackberries. And after 3 weeks, those are the fruits that I do introduce.
Oh, okay, so you have people wait 3 weeks. Okay.
All right. But I want them to see, you know, whether or not they react to it.
Absolutely.
By giving them a chance to be away from it. And often when I say, okay, we can have fruit now, and I buy fruit for them, the fruit rots. They say, we don't want it. We're getting so much from our infusions. We're getting so much from our cooked greens. We don't crave the fruit.
So is there a particular infusion that I should be doing?
I rotate through stinging nettle, oat straw, red clover.
Right.
Blossom and comfrey leaves.
Okay.
And they are all wonderful. Each one has many things to offer us.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So it's just interesting to figure out and understand what causes a digestive system to not be functioning properly, to cause all these symptoms.
Yes.
I used to think that I didn't eat enough, like three meals, or then I studied and I said, oh, I have to eat five small meals. I'm trying to figure this out, you know? So I'm curious what else you want to suggest I do.
In terms of weight maintenance, fewer meals is preferable. The more meals we eat during a day, generally the more weight we tend to gain.
Right.
So I tend to eat two meals a day. And that's because I load protein at breakfast.
Right.
I will eat as much protein as I can eat at breakfast. And so I'm not hungry again until much later on in the day, in which I sit down to a nice dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I had kasha, wild mushrooms, collards, kale, sweet potato, eggplant, salad, and salmon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then for breakfast, you say when you do your protein?
Exactly. I'll do more protein at breakfast. So eggs, perhaps eggs and meat, eggs and cheese. This morning I had a cheese omelet for breakfast.
Right. Okay. Now, are you do you approve of having shakes in the morning made with, for example, a banana and apple juice that's fresh apple juice?
Just talk about fruit or not?
We just talked about fruit, saying not to have fruit with the yogurt. Yeah. You said to wait several weeks. Sorry, you said to wait several weeks before.
No banana.
No banana? See, that's probably my whole problem then.
What?
I never heard you say no banana. Wow.
Do you live where bananas grow?
No. I've read this before, so because they're sent from far away.
I only eat bananas if I'm standing by a banana tree.
Really? So is that could be causing my whole problem. I eat a lot of bananas. Wow. That could be my whole digestive problem because of eating bananas every day.
And especially first thing in the morning, that's a huge load of sugar to dump in on yourself in the morning.
Yeah, I thought that I was, wow. So if I eliminate bananas, that could be the whole problem.
Well, give us a call back in a couple of weeks and let us know how it's going, okay?
All right, thank you so much, Susan.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we have one more caller waiting here.
Okay.
In the 917 area code.
Hello?
Hello, Green Blessing.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Oh, my God. It's your first time on the show. I can. I really respect your work. And I have a really bizarre question. I feel like during intercourse, I feel like my nipples taste like onions. And I don't know if there's something that I'm eating or I don't know if there's something in my diet that's contributing to that. And I'm wondering if you can give me some insight on that.
I'm unable to give you insight until I can figure out how you're getting this information.
I can taste it.
You can taste your own nipples.
No, I can taste my partner's mouth after they've been tasting my nipples.
Okay, but that's been changed by your partner's mouth. Maybe your partner's mouth tastes like onions.
Yeah, but it didn't beforehand, so that's why I guess I get confused, because maybe it's a combination of the two, but beforehand it doesn't taste like that, and then it's like after that I taste it.
Right, so I'm not... I'm always reluctant to solve a problem that doesn't exist.
Okay.
So, let's just back up just a tiny bit. Is your partner complaining?
No. I'm complaining because I don't like the taste.
You don't like the way his mouth tastes?
After that, yes.
That. So don't kiss him after that for a while. Or have some breath mints by the bed. Or, you know.
Okay, that's
so
definitely feasible.
What do we mean when we say that something tastes like onion? What we mean is that it tastes like sulfur.
Okay, yeah.
Onions and broccoli have sulfur compounds in them.
Uh-huh.
And those sulfur compounds both give some odor to it and give some odor to our breath when we eat them.
Okay.
Sulfur is, however, a very protective substance.
Hmm.
And the sulfur drugs were the front line antibiotics before the development of penicillin and those kind of antibiotics.
Huh.
Eating foods rich in sulfur reduces the incidence of cancer.
Okay, good.
So I would not say that what's going on here would denote any particular problem. Now, what I'm about to say is partly tongue-in-cheek. But it's coming up, so I'm going to say it. And that is that in murder mysteries, when someone is poisoned with, I think it's arsenic, but I'm not sure, their breath smells like garlic or onions. So you might want to check out and see if your partner is poisoning you with arsenic. Or, perhaps more to the point, I know that there are places where the arsenic level of the water can be high. And so
sure.
You want to have your water tested.
Okay.
And see if there's high levels of, there's always a little bit of arsenic in the water. It's a naturally occurring compound. But if there would be enough to actually make. Is that your husband complaining he's ever poisoned with arsenic?
No, I'm outside, so that was someone passing. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I will have to have my water tested then. I live in the city in Brooklyn, and so I don't know what the arsenic
usually,
levels are.
Usually there's free water testing.
Okay.
So it shouldn't have to cost you anything. You can find out from some department, I'm sure.
Can okay.
Tell you. Yeah.
I will do that. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. Green blessings. Good night.
Have a good one.
All right, looks like we have time to go to an email question. Dear Susan, 7 weeks ago, my dearest friend and lover made his transition. We are both 59 years old. I often feel acceptance about him not being in physical form, and I feel him with me and in me. We are still connected on a deep emotional feeling level. I have had a few experiences with birds that I know were him. There are times when I miss him so much that the grief wells up and I give into it. I have never cried so much in my life, and it feels good to release that energy. Susan, what do you recommend to help support me through this life change? Thank you for all that you do.
Well, you don't say whether or not you are already drinking the nourishing herbal infusions, but I certainly find those very, very helpful. Oat straw especially, and even consider an oat straw bath. Make half a gallon of oat straw infusion, pour it into a hot bathtub, and slip right in. You will find it almost as comforting as floating in your mama's womb. Do we have another email question?
Yes, we do. Dear Susan, I would like you to help me get a remedy for increasing vagina fluid so that I do not get yeast infections. I'm sure you will help. What can I do?
I'm a little unclear about your concept here. I'm not sure that anyone has ever shown that vaginal fluids, copious or uncopious, lead to yeast infections. Let's be clear here. The yeast that causes yeast infections lives in the vagina. It's not like it comes from somewhere. We use the word infection. It makes it kind of sound like, you know, an infection, like an invader from somewhere. But no, it's a natural part of the vaginal flora. And what happens is that the pH of the vagina can be fairly easily changed. And those changes in pH, which is acidity, alkalinity, in the vagina make it more or less hospitable for the yeast organism. So we want the vagina to be alkaline. I'm sorry. The other way around. Hello. We want the vagina to be acid. And we want to avoid things that make it more alkaline. So things that make the vagina more alkaline include male ejaculate, birth control pills, hormone therapy, diabetes, high blood sugar, antibiotics, stress, even positive stress, bubble baths, washing your vagina with soap, douching, feminine hygiene sprays, artificial sweeteners, diet soda, raw fruit, fruit juice, hormonal changes that precede menstruation, menstrual fluids, pregnancy, and lochia, the flow that follows childbirth. Ways to restore acidity. First and foremost, yogurt, both orally and vaginally. Then acidophilus capsules inserted in the vagina. Ascorbic acid capsules inserted in the vagina. A saltwater sitz bath. Or a sitz bath, finger bath of a handful of salt in a quart of warm water. Or 2 tablespoons of vinegar and a quart of warm water. Or a cup of hydrogen peroxide in 3 cups of water. Or a sitz bath of oak bark or any other astringent herb. Note that astringent herbs, which make the vagina drier and have less fluid, are used to counter yeast infections. There are certainly a great number of things that we know can increase the lubrication vaginally, but as I said at the very beginning, we haven't connected any of those to freedom from yeast infections. In fact, one of those remedies that I mentioned, the oak bark, which is a very powerful astringent herb, very much cuts down on the amount of fluids in the vagina and is one of the best for reducing and eliminating chronic yeast infections. That information is from down there, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. And you can find that at The Wise Woman Bookshop. All right, it looks like we get to talk tonight to Jean Siegel, PhD, who has been helping individuals and families for over 40 years as an innovator within the fields of emotional intelligence, holistic health, attachment, stress reduction, and relationships. Dr. Siegel coordinated a series of conferences linking brain development to the emotional relationship between infants and their caretakers. She has written 5 books, which have been published in 13 languages. I hope that Dr. Jean Siegel is with us. Hello, Rebecca. Are you seeing her number?
I was just trying the Skype number that was here, but it must not be her. So is this the right number for Jean? No.
I'm sorry?
I was trying a Skype number, but we didn't get a response on that line. So she's not here yet.
She hasn't called in yet.
Nope, she has not. I have another kind of shortish email question if
right.
You want to try to answer
Let's
that.
Deal with that and okay. Give her another minute to get here.
Okay. I have, dear Susan, I have stored an old OSHA root for tincturing one day. Because it is a dried root, do I simmer it for 30 minutes and cool before chopping up to make a tincture? Thank you for your advice.
I use dried roots just as they are to make tinctures. Certainly your tincture will make up faster if you can break up the dried root in some way. But if you can't, just put the whole dried root into a jar, cover it with 100 proof vodka, and let it sit like that for at least a year. If the root were more broken up, your tincture would be ready before a year, but if it's a whole root, a year is a good amount of time to take. I've never heard of anyone simmering a dried root. And it would seem to me that if you were going to do that, you would need to add all of the liquid or the water that you cooked it in, or cook all that water away. And I'm not exactly clear what the point is. I think what you're saying is that you're going to rehydrate the root. I figure that the vodka will rehydrate the root, and sure, a little slower because it's a cold process rather than a hot process. But I'm not going to be using or eating the root directly. I'm going to be using the tincture. And in most instances, it has been recommended to use dry plants to make tinctures. In fact, I'm one of the few people who really insists on using fresh plants to make tinctures because I do find that it makes a far superior tincture. But for most of us, getting fresh OSHA is quite out of the question. And so I make my tincture with dried OSHA root as well. And again, when it's whole, I put it in a jar, cover it with 100-proof vodka, and wait a year before I start to use it. Green blessings.
All right. I'm not seeing her here yet. Would you like to try to call her in? Or?
Sure. Do you have a phone number? I have 310-844.
Yes, I do.
The number you have?
Yes, it's the same number. Let's
and
try
so you tried that. Didn't work.
I have to call her on the air with you, so...
Hey, go right ahead.
Okay.
All right.
Hello?
Hello, is this Dr. Jean Siegel?
Who is this?
This is Susan Weed. You have an interview scheduled tonight.
Oh, that's correct. That's right. I'm here. All right. Sorry.
We're so glad you can be with us.
Thank you. Are you ready to go, Susan?
Yes, indeed. We're 5 minutes late.
Okay.
Okay. As a matter of fact, I've already introduced you 5 minutes ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, very good.
But you were supposed to call into my show.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that you were calling me. I'm sorry. Okay, but we're connected. That's the important thing.
Indeed, we are. So in your bio, it didn't say anything about Help Guide, and yet the first suggested that I ask you is what is Help Guide, but I don't know. I don't even know anything about it to even ask you any, to even know why I would want to know what it is.
Well, it's one of the largest, probably the largest mental health self-help website in the world. 65 million viewers came to Help Guide last year. You don't know a lot about it. We've never spent a penny in advertising. This is all word of mouth. The site's, I don't know, about 12 years old, and it has become really the go-to site for people who are feeling a great deal of stress or, you know, have problems with anxiety, depression.
Uh-huh.
There's also lifestyle skills, because that's part of mental and emotional health these days. Exercise, diet, sleeping well, these are all subjects that are focused on in the website because they're things that people can do something about.
So it's not just a guide to pills and practitioners?
No. This is a place that people with a problem, people with challenges, we're pretty sure that most of the people who come to us come with a problem, looking for things that they can do to make that problem, to ease that problem.
So the Help Guide itself, first of all, Help Guide is a website.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's called helpguide.org. Mm-hmm.
And it's not a website that refers people to other people for help. It's a website that offers help directly.
Exactly.
Got it.
Okay.
That's,
and you know, many, many other institutions, states, police departments all over the world, fire department, you know, many, many institutions refer to Help Guide, as well as individuals. The Veterans Administration, for example, is using some of our material to send little tips to veterans with PTSD, where they give a tip that's taken from one of our articles and a link to the website.
Very nice. So your website is being used as a resource.
That's
by
it. Right. That's right. It is a resource. It's a resource that contains articles, but there's also a something called the Emotional Intelligence Toolkit, which is, all of this is free. There are no ads on the website, none at all, so that we can use the full page for text that will help people. And as I say, so there are articles, and there is also this toolkit, which is a resource for really teaching people who are overwhelmed by stress and their emotions, how to bring their stress and emotion into balance. So that's a pretty, it's a big resource. I mean, it has many steps connected to it. But if people have the time and the energy to follow through, it is a resource that's very powerful. I should say we also collaborate with Harvard Medical School at their offer, at their suggestion, so that the material is, people can, you know, come with a sense that it's well researched. It's not, you know, it isn't, it's as solid as we can possibly make it.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, are there other websites like helpguide.org?
I don't believe so. If there are, I don't know of them. We're a nonprofit, so that we, you know, that gives us, enables us to say the things and do the things we want to do. We're beholden to nobody. We have no advertisers telling us do this, do that. We're informed by, I've been a practitioner for 40 years. I'm a writer. I have a PhD in sociology and an MA in psychology. The purpose of the website is quite simply to help people. I should say that the inspiration for the website was the result of the suicide of my daughter. Our daughter, Robert, and I lost her battle with bipolar disorder at age 29. And she would have used a website. We knew, you know, she was a writer and she used the internet. And the website was inspired by our effort. We wanted to do something that we felt would have helped her and people like her who are searching. And many people search on the web these days. And we wanted to provide them with very solid resources that didn't overwhelm them and that were that provided the kind of information that they could do something with. There's lots of information out there. But, you know, unless you can do something with it, it isn't too helpful. So we analyze the information, we do the research, and we try to supply information that's not overwhelming and looks, you know, it's important, the look of the website is important to us, that it shouldn't look overwhelming. And we hope that people then can hang in there, do some reading, get some tips and ideas about things they can begin to do to help themselves to start to feel better. This is not necessarily in the place of a therapist or therapy, but it's often, for many, it's an augmentation. I know the UC school system has used our website for a long time. But it also is, there are so many people today who just don't have, particularly insurance for mental health issues. So it works with help from a counselor if you're lucky enough to be able to afford that. But it also is helpful to people who have very few resources.
Could you give us an example, perhaps, of something that we might find? And if it's not asking too much, I would like to honor your daughter by asking her name.
Leslie Morgan.
Leslie. What a beautiful tribute to Leslie to set up helpguide.org, which helped 65 million people last year.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Leslie, and thank you, Dr. Jean, for doing that for Leslie.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Yeah. So could you give us an example of what we might find, for instance, someone very dear to me was having an argument with her beloved and said,
mm-hmm.
I feel killing myself. And her beloved said, then why don't you do that? Which is certainly not what we want to hear our beloved say.
No, it's not.
So she went to like a local emergency room, and they said they were going to call the police, and she went running out of there because, as you say, a person in that mental state and that emotional state is already feeling totally overwhelmed, and then to be told
exactly.
Police is very frightening.
Right. Okay. What someone in that state if they access the website, we have a topic called suicide prevention. Under that topic are a number of articles, one being help if you're suicidal. And it can be right up front there. I mean, the minute you look at it, you see there are phone numbers you can call with people on the other end of the line who are experts in taking these calls and dealing with this kind of situation. So they would immediately have access to a resource that would be prepared to deal with what they're feeling and to offer support and help and encouragement that they're not going to feel like this forever. And you know, there's a whole training that goes into that. We don't take the calls ourselves because we're not trained in, you know, for example, in this subject. Takes real training, but if you have what we supply are the phone numbers and then additional things that you can do to help yourself to start feeling better when you feel so overwhelmed and helpless and hopeless.
That sounds really, really wonderful.
It is. You know, another example, Susan, would be that there are so many that we've just, you know, we were all reading, there's so many veterans now who are coming back from these wars with PTSD. And at least in California, in many parts of the country, it can be a year before they're ever seen by someone. It's just so overwhelming to the system. So we offer resources like the toolkit that could help someone to gain more control over their stress, to use their senses. It turns out that one of the quickest ways to bring stress into balance is to use your senses, but it's different for each person. So there's a whole program for discovering what kind of, is it music? What is that the sensual input that you need? Is it visual? Is it looking at something? Is it movement? Some people need to move and they start to feel better immediately. But for everyone, there are certain sensations that help us very rapidly calm down. And, you know, they would be able to access, to learn about that and to begin to do that right away, which would help them cope.
And that is so much what we need, is something that we can do right then.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Not something that we're going to start next week and it's going to help us after 6 weeks.
Right. It's now. So many of the things we struggle with today, you know, it's like by the time you reach out for help, you're pretty far out. You know, you don't have a lot to give. You need some support, some hope right away.
Right away,
yeah.
And helpguide.org is there to offer that help.
We hope so. That's our intention.
I'm curious about the books you've written.
Well, I've written a number of books that kind of focus on emotional intelligence. Not kind of, they do, because it's really the emotional parts of the brain and learning how to manage our feelings and how to bring them into balance that it is the cause of so much of our inability. You know, we struggle so in this day and age with stress. Our stress level for most people is just way over the top. And the way to get a handle on that, the best way to deal with that is to learn how to manage, to face and be comfortable with our emotions. So I have written a great deal on this subject. And like many writers, you know, I tend to write this, it's not exactly the same book, but I examine the same subject from different points of view. And as you mature and age, you learn new things. So I would say that for the last, I don't know, 30 years, I've been writing about the subject with more and I hope better understanding of it, and always trying to find ways to help people use the knowledge that, you know, to help people be able to, with more efficiency, face emotions that they often dislike but really need and can help them if they know how to deal with them, cope with them appropriately.
Yes.
I don't know if that makes, does that make any sense to you? Do you?
Oh, it's a lot of sense to me. I talk to people about elegance. I say that I have never seen anything in nature that was self-destructive, and therefore I completely eliminate that idea as regards to humans. There is no behavior that is self-destructive. But there's very inelegant behaviors.
That's right. Well, they're really all of our emotions, including fear, including anger, including sadness, have a purpose.
Exactly.
They have a purpose, and they convey important information that we really need to know about.
Yes.
And that's the book that I'm working on now is called Feeling Loved, which really.
I like the title.
It's a book that really looks at the experience, and it separates the intellectual awareness that we're loved from the experience of feeling loved. That many times we know, we say our mothers, our fathers, or this or that, whatever, that we know that they love us. They would be there if we were in trouble. We could reach out to them. But somehow in the relationship, we don't feel that love. We don't experience it. We don't feel connected to and understood and valued. And that's the feeling that when we have it, when we do feel understood and valued, and it's actually a rather mostly nonverbal experience that comes about because of the sensual communication. When we have that experience, oxytocin is released, and our stress levels are balanced. I mean, when animals get upset, and what they do is they kind of snuggle with other animals to calm them down. So the release of oxytocin and the feeling connected to others is probably the fastest and most powerful way of dealing with stress. And it's ironic that at a time when we have more stress than ever, so many people find that they don't have this experience in their relationships. And so the book points that out and then goes on to tell people how they can get it, what they need to do in order to have that experience.
Right, because a text is not a snuggle.
Right. The way that I understand it is that when when someone communicates to us that they get what we, that they understand what we feel, and that they value us, that they understand, they can see us clearly, and what they see they value. When we have that experience, we feel safe with them and content, and it's kind of big sigh. And that's very deeply relaxing. I would say profoundly relaxing to have that kind of experience. And nature provides it. Our brains are eager to have that experience and always ready for it.
Yes. Ready to feel loved.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the book you're working on right now?
Yes.
And that will be your sixth book?
Yes.
At helpguide.org, are your books available?
They are. This one isn't. It's not sold yet. The press is trying to sell it. But the other books are. They're on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And other online websites. Most of them are still selling. I mean, they kind of tend to be around for a long time because they're kind of subjects that don't go out of fashion. You know, they're not fashionable subjects to begin with. But on the other hand, they're subjects that don't become unfashionable either. They're not trendy.
Exactly. They're verities. They're things that are going to be true 100 years from now, and that were true 100 years ago. They're
exactly.
Not subject to the whims of culture or mode or fashion.
No, they're really biologically based.
Correct.
They have to do with our humanity, our biology.
Yeah. I had a very fierce emotional teacher, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Oh, yes, I know her. I knew her.
Yeah, and she restricted us to 5 emotions, and she said all the rest were fake.
What were the 5?
Anger.
Uh-huh.
Fear.
Fear. Mm-hmm.
Love. Joy. And I can never remember the 5th one. It always comes
it's
to me.
Probably sadness. Those are primary emotions.
Yes.
By the time the baby's a couple months old, has had those experiences.
Still fear is the fear of loud noises and the fear of height.
Mm-hmm.
And that she told us every other thing that you say you're feeling is your own construct and is not real. That was difficult to cope with, but really eye-opening.
Interesting. Yeah, it sounds like we may have been around for a while, you and I both. If you knew Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, she was. Did you happen to know Carl Rogers, too? I mean, they were all kind of the same around that same time.
I didn't actually know him. I met him once, but not to say anything other than, well, yeah, there he was. But I actually spent some time with Elizabeth and,
uh-huh.
you know, was part of the Life, Death, and Transition group.
Oh, good. Well, you did that work. Okay.
Yeah, did that work.
Wonderful work.
And saw hundreds of people doing that work.
Yes, it was quite, it was... It was revolutionary at the time. It really was.
Well, you know, I think it still is revolutionary.
I think so, too. Yeah.
A lot of it going on, you know, and she had her rubber radiator hose and her Manhattan phone directories, and she just had one person after another, deal with what they were dealing with. It was truly remarkable.
Well, that's she was, you know, a humanist, and that's part of the tradition, I think, that I follow, too, and sounds like you do, too. It was a tradition that said, you know, you don't have to be afraid of what you feel. You just have to understand it.
And I would go even further. I say to people, you don't even really have to understand what you feel, but you have to be aware that you have a choice as to the elegance of the expression of it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
right. Being a human being means you are anxious. That means you have to. Being a human being means you have to live on the planet with the scariest, most threatening thing on the planet, which is other human beings. And we all relate to anxiety in different ways. And let's face it, you can relate to anxiety by getting drunk every night, but it's not a very elegant solution.
Okay.
Also relate to anxiety by meditating every night. That's a much more elegant solution.
Yeah. So I would say that given with the term elegant, which is a lovely term, my husband loves that term. He's an engineer. He loves it from that.
Ah, yes.
It's a big word, big happy word for engineers. But and I would say that my approach or the approach of the website is to help people to teach them skills for managing that stress in an elegant way.
Yes.
In a way that is both appropriate, very dependable, very reliable, something they can really count on. And that they can count on that will help them and help others at the same time.
So that's HELP, help.
Mm-hmm.
HELPGuide.org.
That's right.
HELPGuide.org, and there you will find expert, ad-free resources to help you become more emotionally intelligent. Now, believe it or not, Dr. Jean Segal, we have reached the last couple of minutes of the show, and I'd like to offer you the opportunity to kind of fill the listener's ear. What do you want to leave them thinking about?
Well, I want them to think that there is always, that it's always within their power. There are always things they can do to make life better, and they can always learn how to feel loved and how to make others feel loved. And that's just so delicious and so important in life. And it's never too late to do that.
It's never too late for love.
Thank you.
It's never too late to feel loved. It's
that's
never
right.
too late to love yourself. Too never too late to put an end to the blame and shame game.
Great.
So I so appreciate you, Dr. Jean Segal, and I am so thrilled that we are able to share with people your fabulous creation in honor of LeslieHelpGuide.org.
Thank you, listeners,
for being here with Susan Weed and Dr. Jean Segal, helping us to reweave the healing cloak of the ancients. We're all in it. Together and all together, we will create the world that we wish to live in. Green blessings, everyone, and good night.